Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We're going to have on with us again today Mariam Jacobs, our regular Wednesday psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. We are going to be talking about the various issues of the penal system, the causes of psychological damage, the inhumane conditions in the prisons, and those who are subjected to inappropriate treatment. Mariam Jacobs believes in deeper justice, which she states many times, the causes behind the crime and not the crime itself. And so we've been discussing a lot of these issues, and I'd like to bring her on once again today to have her talk a little bit about what she does and also talk a little bit about this deeper justice and other issues that she's been working on. Mariam Jacobs also has a book that's going to be released sometime around March, I believe, but I'll let her talk about that as well. So, Mariam, are you on with us today?
Hello, Leona. Yes, I'm here.
How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. So, Mariam, do you want to, again, the audience is probably very well aware of you, but if you will, for those who haven't heard of you or haven't been on to listen, if you could talk a little bit about what you do, the work that you've been doing, and also about the book that you have in the making right now.
Yes. I come from the Netherlands, and the work that I do, I work with people who have psychological issues, and I try to find on a deeper level what the source is of these issues. That can be trauma, that can be disorder, that can be everything. And that's why I call it deeper justice. And I work both inside the prison system as outside the prison system. I am writing, studying philosophy. I'm graduating, writing my thesis. And that's about the United States prison system. And in my thesis, I explain what's the foundation, what are the roots of mass incarceration, and why do you have it in the United States. I'm also writing from this thesis, I'm writing a book about the same subject, and that's about it.
You know, there's been a lot of radio shows talking a lot about some of these issues, as well as some of the racial issues that have been going on in this country, and there's been so much, in a way it's good because it's bringing everyone's awareness. But there's been talk about the racism that goes on in this country, the oppression that many are going through. You know, there's just so much going on in the United States, and mass incarceration is a major issue. And there are so many other issues as well. And I want to bring up real quickly, right now the Sentencing Project has been working with coalitions around abolishing life without parole sentencing. And there's been a survey recently that was composed by a couple of incarcerated individuals. And the survey is really a good one because it's listing that they want them to put their names down, and what they've done throughout the years that they've been incarcerated, all the programs they have been in, anything that's been achieved. And my concern with that is I ask that they amend that survey to include those who have not been allowed to participate in programs, those who have not been allowed to, you know, be involved in educational or work programs, those who have been confined 22 hours a day. And I think this is very relevant because abolishing life without parole is not going to help those who have been denied all these years. And what I'm concerned of mainly is the psychological damage that's being done to many of these prisoners who are being confined in their cells for 22 hours a day and those who have not been allowed to be productive while incarcerated. Can you speak a little bit about that? Because these podcasts that they've been having, not only with this radio show, but also with others who have either been incarcerated or they have known someone that's been incarcerated and that has a lot of injustice has been done to them. And this is something we really need to get out in the open. I mentioned Chinupa Buhamani the other day, from his radio show, the Native Indians on Fridays and Saturdays, and they have concerns about the white man, and I'm going to clarify that again because mainly what they're talking about is the government. But they're right on target because they're talking about the injustices going on in their culture, but they also are aware of the injustices going on around the country in the penal system. And this is something that I would really like to have you talk more on because there's a lot of people incarcerated who have not experienced the problems that many others have experienced, especially those of color. So if you can talk more about some of these issues as well, I'd appreciate it.
What comes in my mind now, you mentioned Chinupa. I think that a lot of people are focusing on only one part of the problem. So the Native American people, they are focusing on the problems they have. The African Americans people are also focusing on their problems. And I think it's time that people look at the whole pattern that lies beneath all these problems, because there are many problems in your country and there is a lot of racism. I do understand, I have become more aware of the fact that your country, I think racism has always been an issue in your country. So in a way, your country is rooted in racism. So it asks a lot to leave behind the colors and look at the human being as a whole, one race, with a diversity in colors or cultures. I think the problem itself does not lie in racism. The problem lies beneath racism. And yes, the problem also lies in the government, but it also lies, what I've mentioned before, in the corporal power and the 1% rich people, the real rich people, not the average rich people, but the 1%. And what I think is that incarcerated is linked to that. So what I consider the United States only a democracy for the 1% and the corporations, and it's not a democracy for the communities and the average people, because you have first-class healthcare, but it's not available for everybody. You have privatized education, which is a pity, because education helps young people to develop themselves and stay out of trouble and have chances to develop chances for better jobs and all that. So, but that's very difficult. I read last week, I read an article. It was about the governor of Florida. He does not want that the true history of the African American people is taught in schools. So there you see that what is taught is what's approved by corporal power. It's all privatized. And I think a huge problem is in that. And what I said before too is that people have to realize that racism is a problem in the streets and in the communities, but it's a tool to keep people divided, because for as long people are divided and fight each other, they don't unite and fight the true enemy, and that's the 1%, and that's the corporal power. And mass incarceration is linked to all these issues, because the biggest part of the population in prisons are people who have more trouble to reach a normal life. They are often poor people, people from broken families and all that. So there is a lot of psychological problems are inside. What you see in the prison system is that there is no division in that. So the people with mental issues also are locked up in prisons. Elderly people, very old people who barely can walk, they are still incarcerated. And why? Because the prisons have to be filled. So you have mass incarceration. And despite all the protests there is, and despite all the reform groups that there are, you have to wonder, why is it still there? There is a party that benefits from mass incarceration. And that's a very difficult party to fight against, because then you need a lot of money. And it's money-based, of course. It's a million-dollar industry. So money is made by locking up living bodies. And that's what they are considered to be, not human beings, but living bodies. And that is a shame of your country. That's really a shame, because what we said in the past is the United States points, I don't know if it was Biden or somebody else, it was last year, who pointed at China, the concentration camps for the Uyghurs, the Muslim minority, and they said they were crossing these lines of humanity. And China said, well, look at your own prisoners, and you are not much better than we are. And I think that's true.
Exactly. That's a problem. You know, I find that we should not be going over to other countries trying to tell them how to run their countries and how to run their prisons, when we're the worst of all. And this is sad. But what I wanted to bring up, too, is we have, you mentioned the corporations and the wealthy, but we have division amongst even the average citizens when it comes to advocacy work. We have divisions because they want to keep things simple. But we, in this country, we can't keep it simple because, unfortunately, prisoners suffer in various ways. And some don't, they don't have to go through any oppression because they're either in the right place with the right people, the right race or culture or whatever it might be. When trying to work on eliminating life and life without parole, when trying to work on abolishing solitary confinement and restrictive housing, we need the very people who are supposed to be advocating for these things to include these people that are actually going through these things that they are talking about. And this is something that we need to look at as well, is we have a government that's doing a lot of injustice, but we also have people in the communities, advocates, we have lawyers, we have politicians that could do a lot more too.
Well, I think, if you look at the whole picture of everything that comes with mass incarceration, and you think about lawyers, attorneys, and all that, from the moment somebody is arrested in the street, I can see that the whole line from the arrest in the street until being locked up in prison, it has nothing to do with justice. It has everything to do with doing business. We talked before about the plea bargain, for instance, or the bail industry. It's all industry, and it all has to do with money. People who are incarcerated, proven to be innocent, who still have to fight sometimes for 20 years before they actually get out of the prison. That has nothing to do with justice. Mm-hmm. While people in the prison, you know, on the surface, they are protected by amendments. It's the 6th Amendment, the 8th Amendment, the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment. These amendments should be there for the protection of the prisoners. And inside the system, you have prison rights. But something is going wrong because it's one big dehumanizing system. This has nothing to do with normal incarceration. This has nothing to do with the quote, what people say, you do the crime, you do the time. It has nothing to do with that, because they do the time by being in prison. But the revenge goes on, and the abuse by a lot of staff, too many staff, goes on. And that has nothing to do with you do the time, you do the crime, you do the time. This is eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. So we talk about, you know, a lot of people are Christian in the United States, I believe almost 80% or more. So a lot of people, they talk about prayer, they talk about Jesus. Jesus is about forgiving, but when it comes to the prisoners, it's all about the Old Testament, where it's about an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And there's nothing about forgiveness. If you want real forgiveness, then you have to start rehabilitation. Then let a prisoner do his time, but fill that time with rehabilitation. And what you see is that a lot of people, they don't see the prisoner as a human being, but they only see the crime. And they don't look at the intention with why a prisoner did the crime. If two people commit a murder, then the crime is the same, but the intention and the story behind that crime is different. But the story behind it is not taken into account. But that's the first step of rehabilitation.
Exactly.
And that's a fact, deeper justice. That's why I call it deeper justice, because if you look at the intention and, you know, you go with the prisoner to, you know, that he becomes aware of his intentions. I mean, I know one person in prison who committed a crime, and it's still a heinous crime, but I do understand what the intention was. I don't say it was okay, but I do understand the intention. I also know another man who has a life sentence and has murdered somebody, but that was a complete different intention. If that person gets released, he will maintain a danger. That's a complete different story. And these nuances are taken out. Only the crime is judged, and the crime is locked up, and the human beings are only living bodies.
I think a lot of these people that do judge, I mean, they don't even know the individuals that they're judging. They stereotype prisoners, but each situation is different. And when they stereotype, it really upsets me, because a lot of these people that they don't know have been locked up either because they were wrongfully convicted or because they had some trauma themselves growing up that resulted in an incarceration. They have to look at each, and they have to consider, if it was their family member, how would they respond? You know, everyone has a family, and everyone, you see a lot of times, I'm going to, first of all, I want to ask the caller, I believe you were on before. You want to state your name, and I think you were on the other day, and I had asked you to come on again, or is this someone else? Is this Joe or John? Okay, perhaps he's just listening. But that's the thing. A lot of people judge based on, and some crimes, I hate to say it, but some crimes are much worse than others. I mean, you have these fatal shootings, but you also have these really gruesome things that happen in life. And a lot of times people don't look at each case as being different, or the severity, or whatever the case may be. And this is why I hope and pray that, you know, they will look behind all of this.
Yes, when I work with incarcerated people in my country, for instance, maybe that's a clear example, I try to meet the wounded child inside that person. Who is the wounded child? In your country, and there are more influences. Who is the parent in somebody? Because the parents also leave an influence inside a person. Was this influence negative? Was it positive? In what way was it negative or positive? All these questions are crucial for self-insight. Those questions are not asked in the United States prison system. And another thing is, on the outside, you are used to a certain level of violence that we have not here. I've been thinking about it. Words like gun violence is a word that, you know, it's used on a daily basis almost in your country. The word lockdown, what you need in when there is a school shooting or in the prison system, the word, we in our Dutch language, we don't have a Dutch word for lockdown. Now with the pandemic, for the first time, we need to use that word, because now we are on lockdown because of the pandemic, and we use the English word. We don't have a Dutch word for it. Why? Because we never have school shootings. We don't know what it means. We do know what it is by looking at your country. Gun violence, we know what the word means, but it's never used. Police brutality. We have no police brutality. Because police officers in our country, they, of course, they have to learn how to deal with violence and all that and how to protect themselves. But first of all, they learn to be reasonable, to try to get into a dialect, into a conversation with the other person, and to solve problems by speaking, by speech, instead of grasping the gun or the taser and attack back. But they have to in your country because a lot of people carry guns. So I also understand when somebody in the streets makes a sudden move, it could be that he, you know, grabs a gun out of his pocket. But because we are not allowed to have guns, the police here in the Netherlands don't need to be... They don't need to be alert that much, not in that way. So there is so much more violence in your country on the streets, these school shootings, violence on the streets, and it happens so many times, you know, of somebody tries to flee and immediately he gets shot to death. It's so deeply rooted in your culture. And that's also a difference with the cultures of the North European countries. I don't say that nothing happens here. We also have violence, but I cannot compare it to the violence in your country.
No. And the sad thing is that they call for guns. They don't want the violence, but they won't give up the gun. And what happens is recently, I don't know if you heard about it from, I don't know if it was up that far, but there was a 14-year-old girl who went shopping with her mother.
Yeah.
And she was killed by a police officer. There's been a lot of these things. But before you go on, Marion, we have another caller, so I want to just hold off a minute. And okay, would you like to state your name?
I guess I'm just listening. I don't have nothing to say at this moment.
Okay, are you the one that called the other day and got upset because I put you on hold so I could get the name of another caller?
No, it wasn't me.
Okay. So, Mariam, you want to finish what you were saying, but what you were talking about, it does make a lot of sense. And what we have to think about is we have television producers in this country. They're all about making money, and you can see how people are so interested in watching movies like that, gruesome. The worse they are, the more they put out their money. And this becomes a problem because you have a lot of these adolescents, these youth, these young kids watching TV. You have a lot of people that are under a lot of stress that are out there trying to survive, and these movies are coming out. And I think that between the NRA promoting weapons, and I think between the movie producers trying to get all this money by making these movies as gross as they can. And what they do is they take these crimes and they make movies of them. So people are talking out of one tongue to say they don't want this violence, but yet they're really psyched to go to these kind of movies. Where did these movies come from? The stories behind these movies come from real life, you know, affairs. And that's the problem myself that I really disagree with. I don't think they should have these violent movies. I think they should put a restriction on these movies. And I think that they should put a restriction on these gun laws. We have a country that we have a hypocritical country that talks one way and does absolutely something totally opposite.
Yeah, that's I think what you're saying now about hypocrisy. That's the foundation of mass incarceration. That's exactly what you say now. That's the key. And this key you find back in all kinds of issues. That's why you have mass incarceration, a huge amount of people who have no homes, people who have no access to healthcare, all kinds of problems. And violence is glorified in your country. If I go to YouTube and I want to see prison films, you might see some films about the prison in the Netherlands, but those are documentaries. And I find many, 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 many films about the prison system. So even the prison culture is glorified in a way. Hello? Something is happening.
Does anybody want to jump in on this, on the what Marion was just saying?
Who wants to jump on this?
We have all these callers. Would anybody like to jump in on, say something to what Marion was just talking about with the restriction, with these movies and these, the violence that they encourage? I guess that they're just listening in. Okay, so Marion, can you talk a little bit more about the prisons in your country compared to the ones in here? And I know you've been in prisons in this country. So if you can talk a little bit about that.
Well, we also have to learn a lot. It's not perfect. And, of course, the Netherlands is a different country than the United States, and it's much smaller. I think it keeps being important to see that we cannot completely compare the two systems. It would not be honest. We have another history. We are rooted on a different way. But in the Dutch prison system, the incarcerated people remain citizens. They all keep their voting rights. I think that's very important. Another thing is the sentences are as short as possible. Because we know that the longer somebody's incarcerated, the more damage there will be done, the more difficult it will be to return to society because of, you know, losing a relationship, losing the job, losing maybe the children or losing connection with the children. So there can be a lot of damage be done by incarceration, and we don't want the people to be even more damaged when they get out. So the sentences are short. I think in the United States people would laugh about the sentences. That's as short as they are. When I look at solitary confinement, we do have solitary confinement no longer than 15 days, because we know that after 15 days it becomes damaging for the brain. You can see that on x-rays. So it's at the most it's 15 days solitary confinement. We also have these programs that what you see in your country, different kinds of programs. What I think also is a difference is that people have more privacy, like using the bathroom, going to the toilet, that's private. Nobody can see that. It's like, you know, when you are in your own home, it's your private spot. You can take a shower, you have to shower in your own cell, and you have the toilet in your own cell, but it's not, you know, that you only have bars or something, or that a guard is going to stare at you while you are doing your business in your bathroom. So there is more privacy.
I think they actually get a thrill out of watching people, out of doing these things in this country.
It's a kind of power play. Leona, please, you have to see it as a kind of power play. It's a kind of suppressing and dehumanization.
Yeah.
It's a game. It's a game, and that's why when you said about hypocrisy. You can apply that to this too. It's a game. There's no reason, there's not any reason to look at a prisoner when he is sitting on a toilet doing his thing. That has nothing to do with safety. All right? That's nonsense. That's just a game, a power game.
These strip searches that they have, a lot of prisoners don't even want visits because they have to go through strip searches. I can see going through strip searches, but when people are in their cells for so long, and also during this whole pandemic in the last couple of years, when these prisoners have not even been having visitors because everything was on suspension, and yet when they when the, first of all, even with the drugs, there's drugs in the prison. The prison is getting high. Where are these drugs coming from when all this time there were no visitors? Now there's no, they're just starting to reopen, I think, for visits. But back then, when there were no visits, and if somebody gets a visit, they strip search them. And it's, and to me, it's humiliating for the individual, because when they're coming from their cell, they can't have anything in. I can see not, you know, strip searching when they go back in, maybe. But why strip search both ways? You know, it doesn't make sense. And that's another humiliating thing. And we have another caller. Let me just get this and see who's calling in. You want to state your name, please?
Hello.
Hello. Steph. Hi, Steph.
Hey. Hello, okay, it's Steph. Stephanie. Yes.
Okay, I'm going to, if you have anything to say during the interview with Mariam, just feel free to speak up. Okay.
Yeah,
Mariam.
I can personally relate to the showers being not being without privacy. I remember having a black rep speak up when I was doing some time. We convinced the warden, because he was on the warden's forum, and they have a chance to talk to the warden once a month, and he said, you know, we really need shower curtains. This is really an important issue. And he compelled them, and finally, within a few weeks, we finally got shower curtains. But yes, like Mariam said, it's a power play, or as another word, it's their way of enforcing control and trying to put it into the minds of the prisoners, like, yeah, we're watching you. Don't try to get away with anything. We'll keep an eye on you. But, you know, it goes too far.
Yeah, there is no, it has no purpose. Only suppression and dehumanization.
Exactly.
The system is completely arranged and based on discipline. But not the discipline that we need to reach our personal goals, because that's a healthy way of discipline, but a discipline to suppress. So when they talk about rehabilitation, that's nonsense, because you cannot rehabilitate in a suppressing environment. It's impossible. Rehabilitation, you cannot do rehabilitate only by doing a program. Rehabilitation takes place when guards approach you on a normal human equal way, because both of you are human beings. So that's rehabilitation. And not a program that you follow once a week or twice a week. No, it's on a daily basis by saying good morning, by having normal conversations. And guards are taught to keep distance and to not interact. They have to interact as less as possible. So where is the rehabilitation? That's the hypocrisy. Again, that's hypocrite. That's for the public.
And so there are actual guards that will, like, go out of their way. It'll help some prisoners and really start being, you know, very human. Do just that. Try to be more human. Try to relate on equal level. But surprisingly, they're not well supported by their coworkers or the management. And often you see those, oh, this is a great guard. But then, like, next month, where did she go? And so sometimes they're not well supported and sometimes moved on or just quit or whatever happened. But yeah, so that is more the norm, where guards are, if not officially trained, at least through the culture of the prisons, to talk down and look down on prisoners. But
exactly.
A lot of them, personally, they know. They're no better. And when they find out what some prisoners have done, I've actually heard some guards say to themselves, damn, I've done worse than that. I'm glad I'm not here like you guys.
Exactly. You know, I want to say one thing on that, if I can, real quickly, too. Steph was talking about that, a lot of these people that are in uniform, I'm not saying all of them, but a lot of these people in uniform are these COs. They're uniforms and their titles. They take it. It goes to their head, and that's why a lot of times they do more to aggravate the incarcerated. Now again, there was a riot here in Massachusetts in 2020, January of 2020. And what happened there was, after they removed those prisoners that caused the riot and moved them out, they ended up going on an unprovoked attack on all the prisoners, some landing in the hospitals, some landing in removed from their blocks and put in blocks worse than the blocks they were on. Some of them put on the very block the riot took place. My understanding from some people and some advocates was that those prisoners that started that riot were unsatisfied with the CO that was on the block, because he was an instigator. So when they asked to have him removed, they were told they were just going to have to deal with it. And that's probably why those prisoners eventually did what they did, but they got transferred out. But a lot of these prison, a lot of these COs, they are gung-ho, just like with law enforcement. A lot of them get into these positions because they know they can do anything they want and get away with it. And that's the sad situation. That's a serious
It reminds me of the Stanford Prison Experiment. I don't know if anyone has ever heard of that. That was that Zimbardo experiment back in 1971, where he had college students volunteer as prisoners or volunteer as guards. And it all went to the guards' heads. They were just volunteers. And they started treating the other students, their fellow students who were role-playing as inmates, treated them like crap.
Yeah, what was the day? Well, that was the prison project. No?
Yes.
Yeah. And because I was so insightful, because, you know, what you see with some guards, it's not a problem of guards, it's a systemic problem. It starts in the education of, you know, I cannot point to guards and say, hey, you are guilty of what you do, because they are trained this way. And they have to be trained this way, because their training fits the disciplinary system. The problem is systemic. And that is the problem when you look at prison reform. If you want to do prison reform, then you have to change the foundation, the disciplinary system itself. Then you get other guards. Then you get another approach. That's what you see in Norway, for instance. That's the biggest example for everybody, even for the Netherlands. So you cannot, you know, you cannot only change one piece of the puzzle. You have to change the whole puzzle. And then you get a whole other picture. And that's the problem why we have so many people who really try the best to do prison reform, and still mass incarceration is maintained. It's because you cannot only change one piece. For instance, if you would change solitary confinement, you would abolish it, or you would say, hey, we change it in solitary confinement only for 15 days, what we have in the Netherlands. You cannot change solitary confinement, because then that piece of the puzzle would not fit the disciplinary puzzle. Then you have to change the whole puzzle. And that's frustrating for a lot of people.
Because so much prison reform looks at the symptoms until you address the root causes. Carry out one symptom, it just creates another symptom.
Exactly. That's exactly what you say. They try to only change the symptoms, but the symptoms stem from the cause, and they don't try to look at the cause, because the cause is huge. And when you look at the cause, then you also get to this, you know, mass incarceration as a billion-dollar industry and all that.
Remember, Sinclair Lewis said
United States is not about rehabilitation in prison. That's why they don't give them a name. They give them a number. When they get into the prison system, they're not called by their name. They're called by a number. So they're not trying to rehabilitate anybody. What they do, they incarcerate you so much, they institutionalize you, and they hope is to get you back in the jail, you know, like a revolving door. But the thing about, like you said, the prison system has a monetary fund on every prisoner that goes there. Now, if you commit murder, you have $1 million bail on you. Each time you commit a crime, it's a monetary value on that person. So, you know, your governors, your senators, your mayors, everybody have prison bonds in which they get money off the prison. So if you want to reform something, you got time to take the money out of the people's hands, so you can constitute change.
Yeah, and I think you know, somebody, when an incarcerated person, the first thing that they do is take away your authentic being, your individuality, because that's a threat to the system, to maintaining the system as it is. And instead of your individuality, that's what they take out of your body, And what they put in is a system. They internalize the system inside of you. And that way you can adapt to the prison culture. And with that, the whole system can be maintained, the disciplinary system. So it's a very smart system. It works. Mass incarceration works. And because it's still there. If it would not work, it would not be there. And it's all in the benefit for the million-dollar industry. That's the only reason. There is no other reason to maintain mass incarceration except money. And the United States is a neoliberalism. It means that politics and economy are very strongly entangled. You have to, what I learned is you have the revolving door. Politicians go to corporations, corporal high positions, people in these high positions go to politics. Corporations have a huge influence in making laws and writing bills.
You're right about the economic, even with these organizations, these advocacy groups and coalitions and all these organizations, they start out well trying to advocate for the incarcerated. But then the same thing, when money's involved, all of a sudden the focus is on who they can help that can provide the money. That's the problem, because the ones that are really subjected to the injustices are the ones that don't have the money to donate to these organizations.
But this focus on money, in my point of view, is also linked to the American dream, that there is a choice in the United States that everybody should have the chance to become very rich, and you know, everybody should have the chance to become the president of the United States, for instance. It's the American dream. Everybody has a chance. That's why everything's privatized. What a lot of people... So money is important, because you need a lot of money to have a good life in the United States, to have access to healthcare, to have a home, to have the security. Because you live in a privatized country. So, you know, all these issues are connected, and they all form one web around mass incarceration. It's all linked together. But it's a huge picture.
People, like you were saying, people start off trying to help people, but then when money comes involved, they usually change the tune. That's, well, to me, is a lack of sincerity, a lack of dedication, lack of dedication. If you dedicate it to something, then money shouldn't be your priority and focus on it. The dedication to help the people out the best way you can.
Exactly.
That's
other countries.
Yeah, for that you need compassion. Compassion means that you do something out of love without expecting anything back.
Exactly.
I am following an incarcerated person here in the Netherlands for 2.5 years. Last month he said, "What can I give you back?" And I said, "I don't want anything back, because I do it out of compassion for you. And if you give something back, it doesn't feel right for me anymore. I'm not a holy person. I'll make a million mistakes. But if you really want to make a change or do something for somebody who's incarcerated, you have to be there. You have to be present without expecting anything back."
Exactly.
That's compassion. And that's a huge thing. But that's what we need so much in United States prisons, so much, really.
Sometimes we find ourselves advocating for our own loved ones because their help is not there, and that's sad. But again, I've heard it so many times, it's who you know and what you know and all these things. But as the brothers were talking about in the prison, the things that go on in the prisons, they know, they've been there, they've done it. You know, and a lot of people on the outside do not realize, they think that they have it easy when they're incarcerated. They're getting good food, you know, they're getting to do what they want to do, the programs, the Pell Grants, and all these things. They have no clue what exactly is going on behind those prison walls. And that's a sad situation.
Also, you got to understand the majority of the United States prison is properly owned, and it used to be the state, the county, and the fed that had the prison system, but they turned that over to private companies. So the majority of the time, they do basically what they want to do. They're not being checked.
That's it. So many prisoners have suffered because of the greed, the corruption, and the deception, you know, the lies. They have ended up in prison because of these things. And once they get in the prison, they don't stand a chance because the corruption and the deception, the lies, everything still continues to go on. When politicians call the prisons on behalf of prisoners, they get lied to. They get lied to by the very people that are overseeing and that are doing the damage to these incarcerated individuals. And that's why when you say there's no oversight, when you say the prisons own themselves, that's exactly what it is. There's no oversight over any of these people that are overseeing the prisoners. That's where the big problem is.
Yeah, and I think that has to do with the fact that if there would be oversight, then the system gets a problem. Because then everything comes to the surface. And that's what they don't want that. They want to maintain mass incarceration.
You know, I believe that the politicians, the legislative members that are working with the Department of Corrections around the country regarding the funding, should they defund or should they continue with funding or increase the funding, those are the ones that should be overseeing. And I have a real problem with that, because if they can sit down with these people and talk about the funding and they don't have any control over what these people are doing, they don't have any people except to meet with them to find out from their version of what they're doing. Because if they're going to meet in coalitions with the very people that are doing all these things, then they're not really learning what's really going on behind it and where the funding really is going. And a lot of times they're talking about these programs when they're not, you know, they actually recruit volunteers to go in and do workshops with these prisoners, yet they're getting paid, they're getting funding to have these programs for these prisoners. Volunteers are going in. I trained with the Department of Corrections in 2006, I believe it was, as a mental health management. I was on for 3 weeks. I saw a lot of the crap that goes on. I didn't stay with them. But I've seen they don't do anything. But anyway, let me just get this one caller. I'm taking you. You can state your name, please. 323. No, I guess they're listening too. Okay, so I'll let you go back to what you were saying.
Yeah, you also got to understand. Also, you know, what is the motive of a? What is the motive of these people? I mean, what is their motive? Are they trying to impress the people or trying to help the people? You know, what is their ulterior motive? Do they have an ulterior motive behind what they do?
I think, as Marion mentioned, greed. It's corruption, it's greed, it's all these things. Economic in the United States, everybody wants a lot of money. Everybody wants to be higher than the Joneses. Everybody wants to meet their peers' expectations instead of using their own mind to lead or to do what they know that's right. We have a lot of people that are so insecure that they have to cling to their peers in hopes that they're going to satisfy their peers rather than satisfy their heart, if they have a heart. And this is a problem we have in this country. The problem is, what are we going to do about it? We have advocates that are doing nothing but trying to send back and forth emails to one another and talk about these things that they want to talk about. They don't have any knowledge of the people that are really going through the injustices. They're trying to help people that don't need the help or the people that are in need of some help, but the ones that really, really need their help, crying out for help, are the ones that get neglected, are the ones that get ignored. So we have to get people who are really sincere in their goals to reform the penal system, people that are really sincere about getting help for these prisoners. And we need more people like Marion Jacobs on the show and in the prison to help these people. And I still say the American people need to stop calling the American Psychological Association and say, hey, We have people on coming. This we have a psychosocial therapist coming on every Wednesday to talk about the damaging effects, talk about these psychological issues. Why aren't you doing that? Why aren't you out in the communities talking about these individuals who are incarcerated, who have had traumatic experiences in their life, or who are mentally ill, or who have psychological problems? Why aren't they doing something? And that's what we are lacking. We are lacking people that can actually get on the phone and call these people, even Department of Mental Health, Department of Mental Retardation. They need to stop calling. And a lot of these people sit back and they complain about nothing, because if they were serious about their complaints, they would be out there doing exactly what I'm talking about. And these radio shows are not just for people to listen in, but they're for people to actually try to do something about it. And all we need to do is pick up a phone and stop making calls to the Department of Mental Health and to American Psychological and Psychiatric Association. That's all we have to do. If you don't want to leave your house, if you don't want to write letters, make calls. And anybody that knows how to use an internet knows how to go on there and type in American Psychological Association, whether it be in their town or whether it be in the nation. Too many people are
suffering. I think that's a problem. You know, prison reform costs a lot of money, and mass incarceration makes a lot of money. And the lives in the prison system are, there is a monetary value put on human lives, the incarcerated lives, and that's the evil thing. Because life is sacred in itself. It has a value in itself. But what you see with mass incarceration is that there is a monetary value put on lives. And I think that's the most painful thing that there is. That's
money,
the dehumanization.
Money over lives. Sad.
It's not only sad, it's evil. For me, it's much more than sad. It's really evil. You know, I think maybe the devil is more present in the United States than people realize, because it is evil. Glorifying the prison culture, glorifying this violence is evil. If you enjoy looking at the sadness, the suffer in prisons, and you look at it, you look at these films and you enjoy it, then you have to start asking yourself, what evil part is that in me? Because it's sick.
They call it Babylon. This is a Babylonian country. I hate to say it, but money over life and people judgmental.
Yeah, but and it's the same with all the wars that the United States has been into. And it was always overseas. It was always in other countries. Even Bush said, God told me to invade Iraq. Iraq is doomed. It's broken. Afghanistan is broken. Why? The war, the military is privatized. Again, corporal power. So killing people in other countries makes money. Locking up people in your own country, it makes money. It's doing business. That's why I call it the corporal states of America. And all the other people who are living in the communities, I hope one day they will realize they all are commodity of the corporal power. Go to YouTube and listen to Chris Hedges. He can explain it so well. And I hope that people one day they will unite and, you know, protest peacefully, but go protest. Be obedient. Don't accept it anymore to be only commodity. You have the right, you know, everybody should have the right to get access to health care. Everybody has the right to get access to honest education. Everybody has the right to these basic needs, to have a home to live in. Everybody has that right. It's a basic right. It's human rights. We all live on the same planet. Why do people accept being poor, being homeless, being incarcerated for an abnormal, absurd long, amount of years? Why? And so many people even are innocent inside the prison system. Why do people, you know, stand up against it, protest, go in the streets, And don't be violent, but protest peacefully. Be obedient, be reluctant. Say no to the oppressors. This is not democracy. This is an autocracy. Everybody ruled by the 1% and the corporal power.
And
that's
no
what
one
people have
say,
to realize.
No one can say they don't know how to go about it. No one can say they don't know how to go about helping with the changes, because everybody knows that they can pick up a phone. If, you know, these shows are educating many that didn't know before, and they're saying, now I know, I understand, I'm going to do it. But let's have everybody doing it, not just expecting others to do it and no one else do it, because success comes in numbers. You know, like you mentioned, get out there and do protest peacefully. I don't know about protesting, but I do know that they can go to their politicians, support those politicians that are actually trying to make change. You know, do these things. Come together. Join these advocacy groups that are trying to make changes, recommendations, whatever. But there's no reason why anybody can say they don't know how to go about it.
The only answer can be protest, because there is no other way. The only answer is peaceful protest. Stop being part of this system. Unite. See that racism is only a tool to keep you guys divided. Everybody is in the end is a victim of racism. Racism is a mechanism.
You know what I think, too, is the cultures. The cultures. It's just not with the racism. And I'll tell you, a lot of Caucasians are coming to the reality that they need to do something as well. Because before, the police brutality was focused on the people of color. And now, because it's been let go so long, nothing being done about it in the past, it ran over into the Caucasian race, too. So there's a lot of Caucasians that have also gone through some. And I watched this Ben Crump with people that he's representing, and now I notice he's starting to represent more whites as well. So people need to realize it's not just about the people of color. It's about all races now. It's also about all cultures, because cultures are not just involving races. Cultures are involving social statuses. You know, they can be of low income, they can be of middle class, they can be of wealth, but these are also cultures that are being attacked.
Yeah, but I think it all starts with putting labels on cultures, colors, status, classes, labeling people. That's what it is.
Yes.
That's a mechanism. And
you know, we're acting, actually acting as though we don't have the intelligence as those who are leading the country. And the fact is, there are many that are more intelligent than those that are leading the country. Yet, if they don't speak up and they don't do anything, if they don't push to see these changes being made, if they don't come together with all advocates and not just a few, if they don't select just a certain percentage population of prisoners and they try to help all of them, they're going to see changes. But until then, they're just going to be going back and forth with emails, you know, sending emails to one another, making phone calls, you know, and using up monies on ridiculous cards and whatever. But we need to get more involved in actually coming together. All advocates in the penal, for the prisoners, all advocates need to come together. And they say sometimes they just focus on one state, because every state is different. Every state is run by the governor, unless it's federal. Well, every state may be run separately, but they still can come together with advocates throughout the country to start brainstorming on ways they can nationally make some changes.
Yeah, and use each other's knowledge and experiences. You can learn from each other.
Some people, they don't like that because they feel like it's making them look stupid or something. I don't know. But they don't take advice or recommendations. I've always been one to accept criticism, accept whatever people want to throw at me, because that's the only way we're going to come together to get everything out in the open, what our dislikes, our likes, our pros and cons and all this, so we can come together and actually start doing some work.
Yeah, and it's not about criticism. It's about feedback. Feedback is something else. then you don't need to attack somebody, but you can compare different perspectives and see what you can learn from other perspectives. I do that every day. Otherwise, I cannot develop myself. I work with my clients, but I also learn from my clients. They give me their perspectives, what makes me think further and understand more. So they learn from me, but I also learn from them. And that's also with my clients in prisons. I also learn from them, and they learn from me. It's a two-way development.
Yes,
it has nothing to do with attacking or who is right or who is wrong. We never know the truth. We only have perspectives on the truth. And all the perspectives are equal, but they are different. And so we can learn from them. Like when you then look at racism, the black people can learn from the white people, and the white people can learn from the black people. And it's with the Native American and the Caucasian people and other people. That's what it's meant to be. That's why diversity, that's the way diversity can be a very big power, a strength. Cooperate yes. instead of fight.
That's it.
We have to.
That's it.
Life is always a learning experience. No one knows anything, and those who think on everything is a fool, because life's situation is always different and always changes. So everybody can learn off of somebody's experience, life, whatever. So no one knows everything. As you say, everybody can teach somebody something, no matter how small it is.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe it starts with listening to each other, listening
yep.
without judgment and without trying to get one's rights. You know, having a discussion is something else than having a fight. And that's very difficult for a lot of people. What I see many times is that people see listening only as waiting for their turn to speak. But what is really listening? What is true listening? You see, that's a start. We don't listen.
Mm-hmm.
All these elements are important to reach. If people, you said, Loyana, about psychological association, what's it called?
Psychological association.
Yeah. If you call,
association?
Yeah. If you call them, then you want them to listen to you. That's where it starts, listening, you see.
You know, that's what they need to, and they shouldn't have to be told, but they need to be able to you know, talk more about the issues of being incarcerated, because they closed down, unfortunately, they closed down all the mental institutions around the country. And when they closed them down pretty suddenly. And I will say the American Psychological Association, the customer service out of Washington, D.C. is 1-800-374-2721. If the audience would just start calling them, getting them involved, again, it's 1-800-374-2721. And that is the American Psychological Association.
Yeah,
we
have to.
We do. We have to try to help these. When they close down those mental institutions around the country, I remember I worked for some time with May Institute as well. They take on autistic children, but they also work with others. And when they closed down these mental institutions, these people were in the street. They were shipped out to different organizations like May Institute and others, but they just dropped them like they were nothing. And these people in the street, this is why the prisons also have mass incarceration. Because the majority of prisoners are either mentally ill, or they addiction crimes caused while under the influence of some substance or drug, and there's so many, and besides the wrongfully convicted. So if you take these prisoners who are in for mental illnesses, psychological issues, or even psychological issues at the time of the crime, or and you take these wrongfully convicted and you start putting them in the appropriate places. You know, it's like a puzzle. You put them in the appropriate places. I guarantee we would not have mass incarceration in the United States. But then again, you speak of corporations and you speak of all of the prisons for profit. And I think Steph mentioned it too. This is the problem. This is the problem we have in the country. Money over life.
I think, yeah, exactly.
The question is, why did they close all these mental hospitals? Why did they close all these facilities down? What reason did they have to close it down?
Like
money.
You mentioned.
It was cheaper. At that time that they closed them down, they had developed this medicine for instance, people who had schizophrenia or depression. So they thought, hey, now we can close these mental institutions and send people in the streets with medicine. That's what they did.
You gotta understand, United States.
It went together.
Always do things for a reason. They don't do nothing half-heartedly. They had a reason why they closed it down, but they're not gonna tell you. But they have a reason. They always plan in advance why they do things. So it's not by a chance. They had a reason why they closed all these mental facilities down. United States is a very devious country, so they had their reason.
Yeah, well, on the surface, it was about, on the surface, I looked it up, on the surface, it was about this medicine that they developed, but below the surface, it's money.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
Psychiatry is much more expensive, and mass incarceration gives money. So, you know, these people, they committed crimes, they ended up in prison, you had mass incarceration, and everybody was satisfied. Yeah, well, not everybody, of course. You know, the 1% and people with issues, when people have mental issues or other issues, they cost money because they need, how do you say that, public, they need more from the politics, more of the social services.
Oh, public assistance?
Yeah, exactly. So many people who are now incarcerated, if they would be on the streets, they would cost money, so then communities have to pay. Now they give money, you know, for the corporations.
It's
a money thing. It's just doing business.
It's costing taxpayers more dollars to keep them incarcerated in this country.
Yes,
paying
but
a lot
big,
more.
But the corporations who deliver, like the food corporation or the phone companies, the healthcare system in the prisons. Well, the food company delivers very bad food, and at as less food as possible, only the minimum what is needed. We know about the cost from securities, the phone companies. So they make a lot of money because they provide only less than that is needed. I mean, it's very difficult to get healthcare in the prison. So they do have these long contracts with the Department of Corrections. So their money is secured, what they earn, and they earn by, you know, supply as less as possible. Because, you know, they have these long ongoing contracts. And the taxpayer pays for all this, and he thinks that's for the safety in the community, which is nonsense, of course, but that's the picture what they sell to the public. Because everybody, fear is a very large element in the United States. A lot of people are afraid. Fear. There's a lot of fear for war, but the wars are always fought on the other side of the oceans. We have to be afraid because we are on the other side of the ocean. But the people in the United, it's always about being fearful for attacks, fearful for wars, fearful for crime, fearful for the other colors, and racism. I need to carry a gun because I have to protect my family. Why? Why is there all this fear? That's because the politics feeds this fear. If you keep people afraid, that you can fight wars, and those four wars are privatized, making money. If you keep the communities afraid for crime, then you can keep, then you can maintain mass incarceration. You see, because the people in the community agree with mass incarceration, because you say, okay, then we keep the streets safe. Well, it's nonsense, because you have the highest, you have a huge number of crimes. You have the school shootings, you have all these kinds of crimes. There is, so you are afraid, you know, people are afraid, and at the same time, there is a high number of crimes. I would not dare to walk in the middle of the night in the streets in your country, but I can walk in the middle of the night at my river, because there are no guns in my village. It all is linked. It's all linked together, and it's all a game, and it's what Leona said, hypocrisy. There is a hidden agenda beneath what they tell you, what the politicians tell you, what the picture that's given to the community. Even the word correctional, from correctional institution, if you look up the word correctional, it means both punishment and rehabilitation. So they use the word correction, and on the outside to the public, they show a picture of rehabilitation. You can see it on the websites of the correctional institution. And inside this system, it's only about punishing, dehumanization, taking away the personality of somebody, taking away life. If you think about this man, I believe, Leona, you mentioned it yesterday, this man that was boiled in the shower, all right? To death. He was punished. He had to go into the shower. The shower, only the temperature of the water could only be regulated on the outside. Yes? It was a shower to punish. He was boiled to death. You have to be aware of the fact that somebody came with this idea to design the shower. And other people built this shower. It's a conscious choice to punish people in this way. It's not an accident. A lot of steps have been made before the shower actually was there. So it's a very conscious choice to use these barbaric punishments. And that's part of the system, part of the roots of incarceration. It's evil in all ways. United States, except their own 2.3 million people being tortured, because this is not a punishment, this is torture. You can expect it in Russia or other countries, not in a Western democracy, but it's happening in your country. Why?
Inhumane thinking. I think this country has been blessed too much, and it's going to backfire someday on all of those who are ignoring the problem, the serious issues that are going on within the penal system. It will backfire. It did in the days of Nebuchadnezzar in the Bible. You know, he was all for himself and not for those, thinking everything he got was on his own. People need to realize they've been blessed, and if they don't want to share those blessings, or if they're going to abuse those blessings, it's going to backfire. People cannot, they've been punished when they went to prison. That's their punishment. Let them serve their time, and let them serve their inhumane time of life and life without parole for many.
Well, people have to realize that the wall of the prison system is not as thick as it seems. I can watch a movie on YouTube about glorifying the prison culture, and maybe tomorrow I am in the prison because I was on the wrong spot on the wrong time. It can happen to everybody. They are us and we are them. They might be divided by this wall and by taking away the voting rights and all that, but they still are a part of the community. They are part of the people.
Exactly.
So this prison wall is in fact an illusion. It's not a real division. It's not a real separation.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, maybe you are in prison, or I am in prison, or one of the listeners is in prison. We don't know what's happening tomorrow. You don't know what's going to happen. You see? They are not another species. They are us, and we are them. And if we fail them, we also fail ourselves. That's why I have to stay fighting for them. Because if I don't fight for them, then I also fail myself. And if I fail myself, I cannot live with myself anymore. You see?
That's
they
humanity.
We both are part of the same species. And that's a human species.
That is humane thinking. Unfortunately,
yeah.
Not everyone in this country is humane thinkers, but that is humane thinking. That's godly thinking. And it's sad that so many others are just ignoring the fact that these people are human beings as well, as you mentioned so many times in the past.
A lot of people are blind to this. They don't see it. They don't want to see it. They are not aware. Those are people who are maybe incarcerated in themselves because they are unaware until it happens.
You know, the resolution is so simple. If people just come together and, you know, humble themselves. I mean, as I say, I don't mind criticism. I don't mind people telling me that they don't want to do this or I'm not doing this right or whatever. Because as you say, we learn. We learn from other people. No matter what level that person is at in status, I mean, they can be homeless people that have more education than me. You know, I would listen to them because if it makes sense, then they must be right. And we can't always think because someone that's at a lower level than us is not worth listening to. When I watch CNN and MSNBC and NBC and CBS and all these Fox TV and all these news stations, you know, I get so upset because what they're bringing on all these people who have political power or all these people that have wealth or all these people that wrote books. You know, it's not about book writing.
No.
It's not about book writing. I started
and
writing
it's
books
not,
in 2003
no.
and I stopped writing them. I didn't even do anything with them. But I knew there was something more important.
I think what it is, you know, awareness means that, you know, every human being carries his own wisdom. Wisdom is something else than knowledge. Knowledge can help to find your own wisdom. I have 4 children. 3 can study very well. 1, he is learning to become a truck driver. I'm proud of all 4. They are all 4 different.
Exactly.
I don't think in a vertical hierarchy. You know, there is no... People are not worse or better. They are different, you see. And that's another perspective. And some people go to schools or university. That's their path. And other people do other things, and that's their path. But if you speak to people with an open mind, you always can learn from everybody.
Exactly. Even with writing books.
Okay.
When I listen to people, who have written books that have actually experienced it, that have done deep and real extensive research into it, have worked with the incarcerated, those are the ones that have the right to write books, and those are the books that should be selling in the universities, in the communities, in the schools, wherever. But when I listen to these people on these radios, on these television shows, who are writing books based on what they have heard or what they have learned about the incarcerated when they have not even been in a prison to meet with an incarcerated individual, that really upsets me. You know, when they talk about the issues in the country, when they have had no experience going out into the communities, being a part of the communities that are experiencing it, but yet they're writing books on all of these things. And it really upsets me because they're making money off of somebody else's blood, sweat, and tears. And that's what upsets me. That's where they need to start looking at going in and meeting with these people. So when they write their books, they know what they're talking about. And there's a lot of these people on these CNN and all of these stations that are writing about not only the prisons, but they're writing about the political arena. And some of them are just commentators or whatever. But they haven't really been into a lot of these things.
Yeah, but a lot of the media is highly privatized.
Exactly. And the media, they don't even report names sometimes. I listened to the news the other day. I was trying to figure out. I like to listen because I like to see if I know the person or have heard the name of the person. They report somebody was in an accident. You know, their car was totaled. And there's a lot of people in accidents. The cars are totaled all over the world. They don't mention names. They don't mention what happened other than that they were either taken to the hospital or they died. But when you're going to report news, put a lot of meat into that news so that people know exactly what's going on.
Yeah, but the media is also directed by privatizing. And that's, again, a money thing. It's always the same mechanism in everything, also in the media. People who really have something to say, who are very critical and make you think, like Noam Chomsky, Chris Hedges, they are not on these media. The privatized media will not allow them. And they have so much knowledge, insights. There's so much to learn from them. But then I have to go to these alternative channels to listen to them because they are not allowed on the privatized media because they go against corporate power, against this highly privatized mechanism. So what you see there are right-wing channels, there are left-wing channels, but you need channels that have both because both can make you think. If you only hear what you want to hear, you are not challenged to think. You become a lazy thinker because everybody says what you want to hear.
Exactly.
You need to hear the persons that say things that you don't want to hear because then you start to think and to be critical to yourself. And then you can ask yourself, hey, is my point of view still accurate? Maybe I need to think a little bit different. Then you become critical to yourself. That's what you need to stay, to grow in this awareness. But a lot of people are lazy in it or afraid. They fear themselves.
I don't see where they should fear because the only thing they can do is make a change, make a positive change if they're really sincere in what they're trying to do. We have, like I say, there's advocates out there that are doing it for the money. It's like with foster parents when kids used to be put in foster homes. Some foster parents were excellent. They treated the children beautiful. Some of them adopted these children. Well, other foster parents were for the money, and so many children were abused while in the care of a foster parent. This is the same way with the prison, you know, and that's the same way with the public. Some are in for it for the money. Some are in for it just for the joy of being in an organization, and some are in for it to really do some good work in the penal system. And I want to say, Marianne, I am so sorry because you wanted to keep this at 1 hour, and we went way overboard. But what I'd like to have you do now, and if Steph is still on too, I'd like to have her put her information. But can you just let the audience know where they can get in contact with you or the book, how they can get the book, and also what you're doing now, and also then Steph, if you can, and we still have our 111 caller. If you want to say anything before we close, please do. Mariam, you want to go first?
Yes, okay. You can. My email address is mariamjacobs67@gmail.com. I have a website, www.deeperjustice.com. I am on Facebook with my own name, and I have the page Deeper Justice. I am also with my own name, Mariam Jacobs, on LinkedIn and on Instagram. I am still writing my thesis, and I will keep everybody informed when my book is finished, ready to be published. I take my time because I want to do a good job because I think that's important, and I hope to contribute to a little bit more awareness with it. I don't know if it's going to happen, I hope. And that's it.
Well, I'll tell you, with the extensive research you've done, with your volunteer work in the penal system, with knowing about the United States penal system, the book should be very, very interesting. You put a lot of work and effort, and you've been working on it for some time, so I'm looking forward to that. The audience will be hearing, you'll be able to hear more on it, on Mariam's book and her work every Wednesday at 1 o'clock. And Steph, do you want to Do you want to give your information as well?
Sure. The book is out. So I just released a book about a little over a week ago. It's called You Need This. But you can find it on my website at valuerelating.com. One word, valuerelating.com. And I, too, have a web, have a Facebook group. It's called You Need This, you know, after the book. So I've yet to really jump on and utilize that Facebook group, but anyone else want to jump in and leave your mark, I'd be glad to hear from you.
And the name again of the book?
You Need This. And the subtitle of the book is Introducing Onychology, the Study of Need.
Okay, thank you so much. And last caller, 111. Nothing to be said. Okay, so we have 4 minutes left if either of you would like to have any last-minute remarks. And again, I want the audience to know, all of you to know out there who are listening and who may be listening later, to just to know that we are trying to bring awareness to all of you. And many of you already know. Many of you already know what the issues are. You know what the problems are. And many of you may be listening and may be totally against what you're hearing. I don't know. But I want you to consider one thing. Put yourself in the shoes of others, just as we put ourselves in the shoes of those incarcerated. And we, many advocates around the country, they became advocates because they've had a loved one or a friend or someone they know that has been incarcerated. The problem is there was a time years and years ago when incarceration was just that, incarceration. Life sentences and life without parole sentences were not as severe as they are today. You watch TV, you see Judge Joe, you see Judge Mathis, you see so many people that are in the court system who were at one time incarcerated. People make mistakes, and we have to realize a mistake can be made, but it doesn't mean that it should be the end of the world for many of these people who have offended. And I always say, and I'll say it again, we don't disregard the victims. We have great respect for the victims, and we have great sympathy for those who have lost loved ones. But we also need to remember there are victims behind those prison walls. There have been prisoners who have been executed only to find out later down the road that they were innocent. Who's responsible for those deaths? And we have people in prison who were victims before becoming offenders. All I'm saying and all I'm asking is that you please have the compassion to understand or try to understand, try to get to know more about these individuals, because you never know when it's going to happen in your life. We never expect these things to happen. And unfortunately, they do. Whether being stumbled or whether stumbling on their own or poor association or whatever the case may be. We're not asking you to let people go free when they commit an offense. We're asking you to let them be able to serve their time without incident, without being abused, deprived, provoked, harassed, tormented, tortured, or whatever you might want to call it. Because too many suicides have occurred in this country, not only in the community, but also in those prison walls. So I thank you all for listening. Marion Jacobs will be back with us next Wednesday, same time. Steph, I want to thank you for being on. I want to thank our callers for calling in. And Mariam, as always, I want to thank you, and I look forward to next Wednesday. And hopefully the audience will be on with us again next week, and they will be able to try to do something positive themselves to help in bringing on American Psychological Association, getting them involved, or at least letting them know that they should be involved. Because we're talking about lives, and we're talking about mentally ill, we're talking about addictions, and we're talking about so many other issues that are of great importance. So, audience, we are going to be closing now. I want to thank you again, Marion, for being on. Thank you, Steph.
Welcome.
And we'll be talking with all of you next Wednesday. Thank you so much. We are now going to end this episode.